Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Allegedly. It's me, Matthew Cole Weiss, and we have two special guests today. One, since Theo is out, I don't know what he's doing, banging something. We have
just something.
Something.
Inanimate object. It could be.
It could be. That is the voice of Mo Mandel, comedian, and you have the show, a special on CISO, right?
I have an hour comedy special that just came out on Thursday on CISO. It's called Negative Reinforcement. And
so very cool. Well, congratulations
on
that.
Thank you so much. Yes. The other guest is far more impressive, and I'm a big fan of his.
So I'll let you take it away.
Yeah.
And our second guest is Mr. John C. McGinley, who you may know.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks for having me.
Currently on the new show Stand Against Evil, but for many years on the show Scrubs, but also in films that I kind of like didn't remember that you were in, and then you look it up and you're like, oh yeah, he was the guy, he was Marvin Wall Street. He was in Platoon. He was in Point Fucking Break, which is pretty
yes,
awesome.
Yes, he was. And I think, did you get punched out by Gary Busey?
First and last time I've ever been hit in a film.
Yeah.
The rule for me is you have to, after that, because I think it's a mistake to get hit in movies, you have to get killed. And I'll tell you why. If you are disposable enough or not enough of a threat for someone just to cold cock you, then you become that guy. And I think you have to get killed. I've never been hit since.
So you mean your character's status can be equated by how quickly they can just punch you in the face without anyone caring that you got hit?
Then you're that guy, yes.
Yeah. You're right. Because your character in that... Well, absolutely, you're right. But you were the dickhead boss guy, where you're
Well, I don't know if he's a dickhead, but he's Stern, putting Stern up with a jackass that Keanu plays, who's fantastic, by the way. But I think he was, you know, introducing this kid to the bank robbery capital of the world.
Did you see the remake, by the way? Did you approve in the first place that they were going to do a remake of Point Break?
My neighbor and dear friend Laird Hamilton is in it, and he's great. But I didn't know what the film was about. I thought some of the stunts, the wing stuff, the second unit wing stuff they shot was astonishing.
Yeah.
But I didn't get the movie.
Yeah, no, me neither. We'll get into that later.
One of my favorite parts of yours is just one where like you see and you're like, God, like it's just amazing to me. One thing I always just admire about you as an actor, and I really am a very big fan, is even if it is like not the starring role, it's like you maximize so much in a small amount of time, like in Office Space. Your character has always been one of my favorites. And you aren't even like that intricate to the movie, but it's so memorable. Just that look in your eyes when he says he's not a Michael Bolton fan, and it's just like you have this ability to be like to be so serious, and that's why it's funny, because you're not like in on the joke, which I find as a comedian who dabbles in acting so difficult to do.
We all had to audition for Gary Cole's part in Office Space, and then Mike said, "Do you want to play one of the Bobs?" And in the script, they're very, very innocuous. And so I just went down to, we were in Austin, Texas, and I was only there for 4 days. And Mike just put as much slack in the leash as you wanted to hang yourself with. But I was like, I'm going to drive this thing.
Did you ever get to spend some time with Michael Bolton after that?
No.
Have you never met him?
No.
Oh, I'm just thought maybe he'd cross
curious
paths.
If he had seen that scene.
Yeah, I'm just really would love to hear what he thinks.
Just the way that you were so dead serious, he was like, I celebrate his entire catalog.
It was great for his brand.
It probably was.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think the guy sold 90 million records, so I don't know if he really cares. But
my mom honestly had a poster of Michael Bolton in her closet when I was growing up.
I would have to Google him, but I think he sold 90 million records.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's done very well.
He was a stud at time.
He's doing pretty good.
Let's jump into this.
I'm not worried about him.
Me neither.
Yeah.
As I described, we have a little different kind of format. And so we'll just hop into round one, if you don't mind.
Yeah, fire away.
Which is, we'll each have 3 minutes to tell a story. Okay. I'll go first. Yeah. You have kids, right?
I do. I have a 19-year-old son, an 8-year-old daughter, and a 6-year-old daughter.
Wow, that's a big
age. And if in your stories we could not use the R word, it would be much better for me. No retard and retarded. Otherwise, I kind of check out.
I wouldn't use it. So I have a brother who's 11 years younger than me. And when I turned like 12, I guess, and he was about one, I won an award in the county. I grew up in a very small town outside of Philadelphia. And so I won this award, which was awesome. And they had a big ceremony. And it was for, I did, not to toot my own horn, but I organized a letter writing campaign to the soldiers overseas and during the Gulf War. And so I was getting this, whatever. So I have a brother who was one at the time. And that night, before I get my award, we were playing hide and seek because I was a good brother, whatever. He tripped and he fell on the fireplace bricks and cracked open his skull right in the middle here. It was awful. It was terrible. But all I could think about was, you're ruining my big moment, which was a terrible thing to do.
Yeah.
And they're like, get him to the hospital. I'm like, what about me? What about me? And he's bleeding. And I was really mad at my parents. I was like, so are you, you're not coming? Like, and they're like, you can still go, but we're not coming. We're going to the hospital. And I was just such a fucking brat. I was just like, okay, well, fine. So they called the principal of my school at the time, who was there to support me in my behalf, which was really cute because when I got there, he had a little sign for me that said, like, yay, Matt, or something along those lines. My parents weren't there. Anyway, I gave a speech. And in my speech, I thanked my brother for cracking his skull open so that he could steal my thunder. And I was like, it was almost in the getting booze, but I was like such an entitled little brat at that time. And then I walked off and I was just like, I took a picture by myself and I was just like, maybe I should find out how my brother's doing, right? So I had someone pick me up and drive me to the hospital where he was okay. So yes, that was the only award I've ever received, actually, in retrospect.
Such a sweeter story because he was okay.
Yes.
Oh, 100%.
Because he was okay. If he was not okay, very different story.
Now, granted, I have done 70 podcast episodes so far, so I have used a lot of my good material already. Yeah. But this popped in my head, because my brother now lives with me, and you can still see the scar, and every time I see it, I'm reminded of that horrible moment.
But I had a similar kind of thing where my brother's a lawyer, and he has somehow gotten to know Jerry Brown, our governor, through legal stuff. And
Name dropping.
Well, for him. This is not impressive for me. But I was on a sitcom for a brief period of time for 4 weeks, then it got canceled. But when it got picked up, I went home. My parents had a little party. And during that party, Jerry Brown called my brother, and he had to go into the room and talk to the governor for 2 hours on his cell phone and then take off to drive to his house to talk about the economy. I'm like, are you serious? Like,
it's
ridiculous. And it's like, there's no way if you have like intellectual Jewish parents, that's not trumping your little sitcom.
Right, exactly. You know
what I mean? That's pretty good.
Just dominant.
Yeah.
It was all right, brutal. Go ahead, Mo. You got yours.
All right. Well, okay. I was just trying to
think. You can do Hollywood if you want.
I don't even know if this is a good story. I was just sort of like, Theo, he texted me. He said, hey, you got 3 minutes. You got to tell a story about Hollywood. And
okay.
So I was thinking of just the weird way that, you know, a lot of times disaster in this town can ultimately be something good. So I was saying, because I'm a big fan of your acting and I've done some acting, but it's always been something I'm like, it's nerve-wracking to me a little bit. When I first moved down here in 2008, I would get these sort of opportunities to like meet with, you know, bigger level people, and it was always terrifying to me. And
right.
I would always screw it up horribly. Like, I remember I wrote a script that somehow it got to the Always Sunny guys.
Wow.
And they were like, you're going to go and meet with them. And I had never met with anyone famous before or anything. This is 2008. Terrified. I stayed up all night working on what I was going to say, drinking Red Bull, and I didn't sleep. I was out of my mind, and I ended up like crashing my car over to the meeting and having to like cab from the accident to the meeting, jacked up on Red Bull. It was a disaster. Mm. So every time I had a chance to meet with anybody, I would just melt. I got the audition for Damon Wayans. I started shaking. I just couldn't do it, you know? So I had my first...
Maybe not the right career for you.
Well, I've gotten better at it, but it was terrifying. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's really when you go from essentially doing open mics in San Francisco, like I was doing, and I was working as at a taqueria and a bar. You know, your career is at this teeny level, and then all of a sudden you get like a manager, and they're like, "We're just gonna throw you into rooms," and you're like, "Whoa!" Like, it's terrifying. So I remember I think it was like my first general, which I didn't know what that meant,
yeah.
And to this day, I'm not sure. I still know what that is, but when I was meeting with the head of casting at
Warner
Brothers,
for some reason, it's just so they can get to know
you. Yes, and get to know
not
you,
not for anything specific. Effect.
Yeah, so you basically, you know, it's a weird thing. You go in there and you sit with the head of casting at Warner Brothers, it was. You know, and I'm driving out there and I'm just like nervous. And somehow, this is crude, but I literally somehow like kind of like shit my pants on the way to the thing. Like I legitimately did somehow. Like, and I don't.
Somehow.
This is, like, I was just so nervous. I used to like have this problem before I would go on stage. I'd always feel like I was going to shit my pants. And I kind of did on the way there.
Wow.
And I was like at the lot, basically. I was like pulling the lot. I'm like, what am I going to do? And I'm sorry this is so dirty, but I literally had to pull into like a restaurant,
parking lot, take off my underwear, drive by a garbage, throw them in the dumpster, drive to the meeting and be like, what am I going to do? And I had to go into the bathroom and like just like clean myself up as much as I could. And I think I did a good job. And then I'm just in the room like, so I'm from San Francisco and I'm a comedian. And the whole time I'm like, why does this guy smell like feces? Like what? Like, are they just like freaking out? Like what is happening? And you know, like you're like, they're not going to tell me. Right. They're going to probably smile in face. And I'm like, I'm done. In my mind, I'm like, this is it. This is the end of it. This is where word gets around, like, oh, an actor shit his pants into me, and like, just don't hire this fucking loser. And then somehow it turned out to be a thing. But like, I really remember driving by a garbage can, dropping, for the first time in my life ever doing this, underwear into the dumpster, pulling directly into the lot.
For the first time, there's been other times.
No, first and so far only time. Yeah, I also got very nervous on the way here. But no, but anyway, so that's my story.
You know,
story.
The casting director is going to hear this and go, oh, now it makes sense.
But this is what I'm saying. Mark always loved me after that, seemed to bring me in for a lot of stuff.
Look at that.
And so it was like, it was actually one of the only really great general means I think I had, and it probably should have been the worst.
All right.
So adrenaline.
Matt, I'm going to give that one to Mo.
What?
Just because vicariously, not from the potty level, but it is hard being an actor. It's hard.
Yeah.
And when I was the reader, when someone comes in to audition for something, in the room usually is the casting person, less and less the director now. Mm-hmm. There's usually just a camera, the casting person, and hopefully a reader. And I was Oliver Stone's reader for about 4 films.
Oh,
and
wow.
You wanted me as your reader because I love actors, and I'm really going to give you, I'm going to do better than whoever you practiced with last night, whether it was the mirror or a good friend. And so I started to compose this theory on how we actors come into the room, and especially when Oliver is in the room, because it's a big deal. And actors do things to themselves when we're going to see a big mucky muck. We right. are even harder on ourselves. And so my theory was that actors bring in 2 things into auditions, 1 of 2. You can't have both. The first is Pigpen. And Pigpen is a character in Charlie Brown who is preceded and, in fact, surrounded by dirt.
Right.
And the dirt is all around him. And that's what a lot of times we bring in when we subvert ourselves or when we're scared to death. We're scared to death all the time. And sometimes actors would come in to meet Oliver, and the first thing they'd say to subvert themselves, I don't know why we do this, but they'd say, my aunt died in Philadelphia last night. I had to take the train down. I never really got a chance to look at the sides, but I really wanted to meet you. Well, you just lost Oliver.
Yeah.
The meeting's over.
Yeah.
And you didn't need to say that, but we are Pigpen. The opposite of that, so you have a little, I call it Elvis dust. When Elvis dust comes in, it's a combination of being at the right place at the right time. That's the variable you can't control. Preparation, some kind of self-esteem hit that's working, some sense of entitlement, like I belong in this movie, mm-hmm. but without trespassing into arrogance. Mm. And so it's this really ephemeral cocktail that if shaken or stirred too hard, comes out wrong.
Well, yeah. In my case, it would be Liberace dust, probably.
Liberace dust.
It doesn't matter what the dust is. When it's magic. Yeah. I went in to meet David Fincher on 7. For a role that was written for a Latin male. Now, you can cast me as a lot of things. You're not going
to
cast me as a Latin male. But the producer of the movie was also the producer of Platoon. And Arnold became a kind of a mentor for a bunch of us in the Philippines. And he wanted to bring me in for 7. He was the producer on 7. And so I read the script. I thought it was the greatest script I ever read in my life. And I'm like, and California is this tiny little guy in the SWAT team. But it didn't matter. It's a great script. You want to be in great scripts.
Yeah.
And so I went in, and I had Elvis dust all over me. And I can't tell you why. Hmm. But David rewrote it from a Latin male, and he changed it to John McGinley.
Yeah.
Is 7 still the best script you've ever read?
No, it's funny. We were talking about this the other night. The Sixth Sense is the best script I ever read. And we all went in to audition for what Donnie Wahlberg would play. Everybody, all of us, because otherwise it was local hires in where they were in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
everybody else was local hire, and so the only other principal was Donnie's role, and we all auditioned for that. And that script, when you put it down and you realize that you want to throw that script.
It's so funny. I went to see that movie on a date, and we showed up about 5 minutes late. So at the end, when the twist revealed, I'm like, that is the dumbest twist I've ever heard in my life. Why would I have assumed he was dead? And then afterwards, we were like, well, he got shot at the beginning. I'm like,
Oh, we didn't get shot at the beginning?
Funny.
And that makes a lot more sense.
Because
I was like, we left, we talked about it all night. You know, you're on a date, you just rip apart a movie. I'm like, what an idiotic plot!
Hey guys, Matt here, and I want to talk to you about CISO, which is one of the funniest sites around. And I know that because I'm looking at one of the stars of CISO right now.
My hour special negative reinforcement on CISO. CISO also has a ton of other hilarious comedy specials as well as their own original programming. It's awesome.
So CISO is a site you can go to where you for you.
It's NBC's digital comedy platform. It's only $3.99 a month. And if you sign up right now using the promo code Theo.
Yes.
You get 2 months free.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And also you get a lot of back shows, right? Like you can watch older episodes
of SNL.
Things like that, yeah.
Yeah, all the episodes of The Tonight Show are on there with Jimmy Fallon.
And they have original programming too.
Such as the new special by Mo Mandel, Negative Reinforcement. That's a very good point, Matt.
What's that called?
Negative Reinforcement.
Oh, okay. Negative Reinforcement on CISO. Okay.
Yeah, and you can watch it on Amazon Fire Stick and you can watch it on Roku.
Wow, very cool. Yeah. I mean, I know they have other shows like Hidden America with Jonah Ray.
Take My Wife.
Take My Wife.
By Cameron Esposito. Very funny.
Take My Wife. That's if it was me.
Yeah.
Bajillion Dollar Properties. No, it's not. And it's something you can stream anytime, anywhere, correct?
Yeah.
So if I'm just like...
Well, I don't know about anywhere. Like, I mean, if you're in like, you know, Shangri-La, like I can't really speak to that.
I have no plans to go to Shangri-La
anytime soon.
So
then it's going
to
work for you. That's perfect.
It's good. And it's also, this is one of the best things, it's ad-free, right? There's no commercials. So... Yeah. Those commercials, speaking as I do a commercial, commercials
they're like the worst, except for this one. This one's great for CISO.
So everybody, go to CISO.com, use the promo code Theo, get 2 months free, and after that, it's just $3.99. And check out Mo's special, which again is
Negative Reinforcement, and CISO is spelled S-E-E-S-O, and it's NBC's digital comedy platform. It's really good.
All right, so CISO.com. Now back to the show. Now, we are into round two, which is our interview, and I want to talk about Stand Against Evil, but first I want to ask you a question. On your, you've done, as we said, you have done tons of movies, also The Rock, which is, you've done a lot of like cult classics too. In Rotten Tomato, do you know of your movies, which one has the highest score and which one has the lowest?
I would say my Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
Our worst one is the sequel to The Highlander, Highlander number 2.
You got it. That's the worst one.
That was just a doomed production. It was great shooting it. We were in Buenos Aires for like 4 months.
That's
the
hysterical. All right,
ever.
You're on. You got you're half there. And now then, number one.
And number
highest
one,
score.
Is it a combination of reviews plus comments?
Yes.
So the best reviewed would have to be Platoon.
You would think. But it is actually A Very Merry Muppet Christmas.
Oh, right. They came to the hospital and we were doing Scrubs. That's
very,
right.
Very,
that's
very, right. Merry Muppet Christmas.
I would never have gotten that.
What's it like being part of all these classic films? And do people recognize, I'm curious how people react to you when they meet you.
Everything is demographic and geographic. So when we were just down in, we were back in Manhattan for Comic-Con to promote Stand Against Evil. In New York, it's going to be Wall Street and Set It Off with Queen Latifah and Jada. And those are going to be the two in New York.
Hmm.
When you're on a college campus, I just was working in Bloomington doing a flick at IU. Everything is Office Space and Scrubs.
Yeah. It's amazing. College kids are still into Office Space. I mean, that's like, 20 years since that came out?
And I don't know. 18? When is it? I don't even know.
I remember watching it in college because I was dating the production manager's daughter. Karen Nadevi was her name.
Long time.
And she brought me there to show me this movie. And I was like, oh, this is this movie. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I had never seen it before.
Are people normally cool to you? Because some of the characters you play are a little intense. Do they get a little intimidated by you?
The only time things ever get tricky is if you stay too long. If you make the mistake of staying too long at if Mo and I went to for Monday Night Football and you stay there too long, when guys drink a little too much courage,
ooh,
they get a little handsy. And so I always leave early.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's great.
Which line do the drunk guys yell at you of your lines?
It's all over the map. It's stuff from Office Space. I Got a Bad Feeling About It from Platoon, Nicks and Chicks from Wall Street. There's some stuff that guys start to bark. And
yeah.
those are rich man's problems, by the way.
Speaking of which, you were on a show that had a great run for a long time and now about to jump off on another one, right?
Stand Against Evil is a new horror comedy on IFC, Independent Film Channel. And it, when it's really cooking, and I'm one of the producers on it, and the whole thing's about tone. And what I mean is, I don't know if you guys remember An American Werewolf in London or not, but what's great about what they did, what Landis did in American Werewolf in London, is that he straddled two tones, and the two tones are comedy and horror. And the reason that's so hard is because, say you're doing The Exorcist, you're not going to break a joke in The Exorcist. And then the opposite is, if something's too funny, then the threat, there's no consequence from the threat because it's Scooby-Doo. When horror and comedy really work together, it's freaking hard. And when it's cooking, it's great. And so the guy who created this, Dana Gould.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Simpsons.
One of the founding writers in The Simpsons. And one
and
of
also just an amazing stand-up comedian.
Amazing.
Yeah. He's
just
the,
this side of genius.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, book smart and
dark. His comedy can be so dark and funny.
Stand Against Evil is dark.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And so the high concept or the slug line on Stand Against Evil is Clint in Gran Torino hunting witches.
Huh.
Or Archie Bunker fighting witches.
Huh.
And so I play this guy who, in the first 2 minutes of the pilot, we see he's lost his wife, mm-hmm. he's lost his job, and all he wants to do is sit in his Lazy Boy recliner, have thousands of beers, and watch the History Channel. But he can't even do that because 172 witches are trying to kill him.
Hmm.
And
action. Hate when that happens.
And there's this small group in this show that'll be a witch a week.
Yeah.
And it opened last week to the... It got better reviews than Platoon, for God's sake. And Platoon won the Oscar.
Yeah. Can you tell, like, when you're on a set, do you have, like, a good instinct for, like, something's going to be good or bad? Or are you kind of, like, just shocked one way
good
or the
question.
Other? It is a good question. And I think it should be reflected in the overall tally.
Sometimes I can, but most of the times I can't, because like it's almost tantamount to a horse in the Kentucky Derby with those blinders on. Hopefully you're staying in this really finite bandwidth and just working on what we're doing today. Johnny Cusack and I did Fat Man and Little Boy, which was about the making of the atomic bombs. And Paul Newman was down there with us, and the guy who just got nominated for the Killing Field and for The Mission, Roland Joffe, was directing it, and all these great actors, Bonnie Bedelia, and it was a huge Paramount drama about Los Alamos. And Johnny and I wrote our speeches for Best Supporting Actors, and the film tanked.
Hmm.
Not because it was offensive or anything, it was just boring. So that's a long-winded answer to your... I have no idea. Hopefully, I have no idea.
Well, it gives me, like... you're talking about big picture, little picture. What do you... You're fighting a witch in an imaginary world. How do you emotionally get yourself in a position where the emotions are real? And there's no... And, like, you really are... Like, is there a process? Or are you just able to do it?
I mean, no, I'm so process-oriented. It's not even funny. I keep a rehearsal space in Los Angeles. And I have a teacher, and we just break the scripts down just to their bare bones, and we take them apart and see what resonates, and then put it back together.
Let me ask. I mean, I'm sure you've worked over the years with actors that haven't taken the craft as seriously as you do. And how does that jive with you when that happens?
Every once in a while, I would have guest stars on Scrubs once the thing started to percolate and get going. And some actors would come in and just kind of want to just go and wing it. And you got to remember, medical terms are Latin. And so you're memorizing Latin. And so when actors would show up, and one actor in particular, I'm not going to tell you who because it's not a nice story, but he kept showing up. And, you know, your sides are a reduced version of the pages we're shooting this day. And they're, I don't know, they're 3x5. And so actors have them, and they're looking at them until right before we go. And then we go. And this one actor couldn't remember his lines. I don't think he couldn't remember them. He didn't know them or didn't take the time to bust his ass.
Right.
And was pretty cavalier about it. And I still love the process of acting and how hard it is and trying to peel it back to, like I was suggesting to Mo, finding out what the frick we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing? And with that in mind, I told this actor who just insisted on having his sides right up until action. I just told him, and I've now done this a lot. It's a horrible thing, but I said to him, you know what you should do is just keep the sides in the frame because we're just going to be on me listening because it's infinitely more interesting than seeing you struggle with words because you're not doing anything in the context of the piece. you're trying to regurgitate Billy Lawrence's words. And so I guarantee you we're going to be on me listening, and it's going to be twice as engaging. Hmm. The actor started to memorize his lines.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be a thing, too, if you're on a show like Scrubs, where you must love it by this point. I mean, it's like it's a baby that you've seen grow, and then to have people kind of come in and disrespect it. You know, I've heard other actors talk about
that.
Yeah,
I buy that. Yeah. I buy that, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some proprietary kind of egoism in there that the five of us kind of lifted, and Billy Lawrence, you know, between Zach and Donald and Sarah and Judy, kind of lifted that thing up. And,
yeah.
You know, now we got it to a good place where 12 yeah. million people a week are watching, which would make it the number one show on TV right now. Wow. And but it's not. And so, yeah, I would hope that you'd come with your A game.
What is something you wish you would have known starting your career in this town that would have saved you duress, pain, would have made it easier, any kind of piece of information?
This is going to sound like a rich white guy.
That's fine. All three of us are rich white guys. Some of us spiritually rich. I have a really rich apartment. So we're all white. Let's tell you what it is.
I'll tell you what it is. And it just occurred to me that I wish somebody had just told me everything's going to be okay.
That is a rich white guy thing to say, but I definitely understand what you're saying. That's
everything's going to be okay. Yeah. It is.
So can I infer by
or
that?
Or are you going to go do something else, and that'll be fine too?
So I can infer by that there was a lot of years where John C. McGinley was beating himself up, wondering is this going to be enough? Like, why am I not farther? All this stuff that everybody basically does.
Yeah.
You're also guilty of these.
I mean, I was chasing films around the planet. I was doing, for a little while there, if you look on IMDb, I was doing 5 films a year just chasing it. I didn't have really a criteria for people used to go like, how do you pick films? I'm like, what a preposterous thing to say to an actor.
Right.
I love when people say things like that. How do you pick your films? Like, how about offer? The word offer.
Yeah.
That's how I pick my films.
I remember saying that to someone before I even moved to LA, when I was like, I'm not going to go out for commercials or any drama. I really want to focus. And now then you get down here, you're like, oh my God, I don't want to end up working at Subway next month. Like, good
no, but
Lord.
I worked at a place called Mary Lou's on 9th Street between 5th and 6th all the way through grad school. I went to NYU grad in the theater program, which was great. But my mission statement, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but I was making too much money at Mary Lou's. It de-incentivized you going on that fourth audition today. And so my mission statement getting through NYU increasingly as the years went by.
Also went to NYU here, just...
Did you go to
Keep
NYU?
That in mind.
It's fantastic.
I like to throw in that I applied to NYU, so I feel like I feel like I'm also part of the club.
But I just decided I'm not gonna. When Mo said about Subway, I decided I'm not gonna wait tables anymore.
Yeah.
And so I went on the 6th audition on Wednesday, up at Donna DeSetta, which was the voiceover commercial place where who won the Academy Award for Fargo? Franny
McDormand.
Franny McDormand and I were always the alternative couples because we were never Ken and Barbie. And so they'd bring in a bunch of Ken and Barbies for Dentine or whatever it is. I'm making it up. And then they'd bring in kind of the alternative couple. And Franny and I were always the alternative couple.
It's so great. With commercial auditions in particular, you can see where you fall on the looks matter. When you go in, you look around, you're like, oh, we're the goofy guy. We're using the wrong product.
We're bringing Franny and John in.
Franny. Going back to Scrubs, have you heard, or is there any chance of any kind of reunion or anything, you know, especially now that there's so many like Netflix bringing back shows and things like that? Was that something you would ever hope for? Or?
No. There's 192 episodes, 200 episodes for 9 years. And so it begs the question, if you were on that show and you were lucky enough to be on that show for 9 years and you didn't get something out of your system, some eccentricity that you wanted to exercise, what the frick were you waiting for? Yeah.
Scrubs was that show where you'd be like, this show's still on?
Absolutely.
Like, oh my God. For a while I would watch it, I'm like, oh, this must be a rerun. And they're like, oh, this is a new, good Lord.
I don't see Zach. I think everybody.
It's done.
I can't speak for anyone.
Right.
But I would. Billy Lawrence, I think, wrote a musical or had a musical written about it. And I think that's there's a dozen episodes of Scrubs that are really A+. And that's miraculous.
Yeah.
So I mean, because Mo's been on doing a half-hour television show, not the four-camera, because they're very hard as well. I just did one with my friend Skylar Astin, and they're really hard. But doing a single-camera half-hour, you work 14 hours a day, and it's impossible that you're even getting it done, or that it's actually good, or that it's actually funny.
Right.
Since no one's in the – everyone's tired. Everyone's grumpy. You just got rewrites handed to you on the way to the set, and – It becomes a grind. I love the grind.
So how do you, as an actor like yourself who is so process-based, how do you deal with new sides coming to you on the set?
On Scrubs, the first five seasons, I worked really the hardest I've ever worked in the off-season, trying to get some fundamentals down for Dr. Cox, which is the character's name, and so that no matter what Billy Lawrence threw at me, I could run. I was so competitive that I wanted to be the guy that no matter what he threw my way, I was going to crush it.
That's
I didn't want it going over to Donald or Zach or Kenny or Neil or Judy, or because they're all so goddamn talented that they would have run with it. And I'm like, no. Billy wrote the word cotillion once, and it was some kind of put down of Zach, and I got to use the word cotillion on national television, and I was like, give me those. I want those, the nuggets. Mm. I want them. I want to fair catch those. Those are the ones I want. And so the process for me, the only way to do it was in the off season where everybody's sprinting to do films. And I was just like, what's the point? At one point we were doing 26 episodes a year, and everybody's like, well, you can do a film on the hiatus. I'm like, no, I'm going to go talk to the shrink, and I'm going to love my wife and take the kids to pottery. That's what I'm doing in the hiatus.
We got to wrap up round two, but I have a couple quick questions I want to fire off at you that I want to get out. Number one, you're in great shape.
Fighting gravity every day.
What do you do? What's your routine?
And
surfing, really?
Pick up kids and put them down.
All right. That's a good one. What are you afraid of?
Weird noises that I don't recognize in the middle of the night, because we're located out in the middle of nowhere, and if it's not the radiator going off, or because you know that sound, when the radiator ticks, or you know that sound when leaves blow across, but when that...
So Stand Against Evil must be the perfect show for you, because I would imagine there's a lot of that going on.
Well, there's witches.
And so weird sounds.
Alien sounds in the house when I'm there by myself. Oh, not when, but when the kids are there, it gets me.
Do you miss soap opera work?
Doing a soap was the greatest thing ever. Because
Another World, which awesome. I remember
years.
That.
And the funniest part about Another World was it was out in Brooklyn, on the stages out in Brooklyn. They would always send a teamster for you in a sedan to pick you up and bring you out there.
From your house?
Like, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Because we needed you there on time.
Yeah.
And because of the amount of pages you do on a soap, 60 pages a day, and which is impossible. But when you're wrapped, you get a Subway token. We are not responsible.
Good luck getting home.
Good luck. They'll send a teamster for you, and you can feel like just the man.
That's funny.
We're
done with you.
That's hilarious.
Okay, two more. Malibu Mob. Is this a real thing?
Yeah, Malibu Mob is a group that works out and lifts together. I would say it's Laird Hamilton, Gabby Reese, Chris Chelios, Johnny Cusack, although he just moved to Chicago, Johnny McEnroe, and
John McEnroe, man.
And Johnny.
Johnny McEnroe.
I love it.
Yeah.
And D.B. Sweeney and Tony Danza was the senior member, but he doesn't live in Malibu anymore. So
do you have like meetings?
No, we just work out and eat dinner.
Oh, that's cool. All right. And then lastly, I know you're friends with Johnny Cusack. Tell me something about Johnny Cusack I wouldn't know.
When you saw him during the Cubs games, none of that was an act. He bleeds Chicago blue.
That must have been his highlight.
Yes. It was a life highlight. And he used to go to games with his old man, with Dick Cusack, who we produced a film that Dick wrote and who passed. Johnny's the heaven that John was in during that three game, when they came back from 3-1, I've never seen him happier.
Wow. Okay.
What is like the role that you haven't gotten yet that keeps you up at night, or at least inspires you to play?
I have not gotten to play who I am in real life. I have not gotten to play a special needs dad yet.
Yeah.
And so I would love to get a script where it's not a woe is me pity party script about our special needs community, the Down syndrome community specifically. I would love to be able to flesh out what it is to be a special needs dad.
Was that a big learning curve, having to learn that?
Profound.
Yeah, profound. I know you're also ever you're walking down a runway, correct?
Yeah, we have our the group that I got with, is, which is very aggressive kind of advocacy group out in Denver, is called the Global Down Syndrome Foundation. And we have this great, everybody, you know, all special needs and cancer, everything, everyone always has to be constantly raising money. Mm. And so our big fundraiser, Gala, is a black tie event that Matt Dillon, my friend Matt Dillon, is going to come join us this year, is this Saturday in Denver. And it's sold out, so I'm not pimping it. and we have our, it's a Be Beautiful, Be Yourself fashion show. Mm. We have a runway, and all our models are people with Down syndrome. Mm. And then so I bring in a bunch of my friends, and the models are escorted by different celebrities. Wow. Last year, Alec Baldwin came out and joined us, and we've had a lot of success with some of my friends coming in. Jamie Foxx is on the board with me because his sister Deandra was born with Down syndrome. Mm. And so it's a magic night, and we raise a bunch of money, all of which is for research. Mm. We've started a hospital, an adjunct to a Denver Children's Denver Children's Hospital. It's called the Linda Cernick Institute, and it only serves people with Down syndrome. It's the only hospital on the planet that only serves people with Down syndrome, primarily young kids.
Right.
And it's a research-oriented group, and this is our big weekend. So we're going to fly in Thursday, mm-hmm. and the whole family will be there, and it's a pretty exciting weekend for us.
There's not many people... I've interviewed through my years every single actor there is out there in my journalism years. There's not many people like when I said you were coming on, aside from, oh my God, he was in that movie and this and that. They said, did you know that he does a lot, like he's a for Down syndrome and stuff? So that's like a badge of honor that you are known for that too. I mean,
yeah,
I want to
advocate for people who can't advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
And that's our group.
Yeah.
Because of our different challenges with language and, never mind our other challenges, but in our Down syndrome community, it's very hard for our people to advocate for themselves.
Hmm. Well, my last question on that, I'm just curious, what is the biggest misconception about the Down syndrome community or the disease?
No, it's not a disease.
Not a
it's
disease.
It's a chromosomal, your 21st chromosome triples.
Okay.
I would say the biggest misnomer is that they ever did anything wrong to anybody to be able to be on the receiving end of language like retard and retarded. And there's no consequence for that language. So in other words, if you use the N-word or if you disparage people in the gay or lesbian community or in the Jewish community or my Italian friends or Puerto Rican friends, there's a consequence for your vitriol, whether it's a boycott or a confrontation. Mm-hmm. There's a tax on that. There's nothing in the special needs community. We're trying to make it through the day. You know, our kids have the triple threat of seizure disorders, cardiac problems, and digestive problems. Mm. And so when that group is disparaged, it makes me want to rip someone's esophagus out. And so we started a campaign called Spread the Word to End the Word. And it's hopefully just inspires a conversation.
Right.
And so people are like, well, what's the word? And it's retard and retarded. It's like, oh, I didn't know that was. It's like, oh, good. Now we're having a conversation.
Right, right.
And then when, you know, when pussies like, are you not supposed to use that word now? When jackasses like Ben Stiller put it in that movie Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
You know, if that had been the N-word, the film would have been shut down.
Right.
Or if he had disparaged his own heritage, if that had been something the Germans said about Jews,
right.
The film would have never opened. But there was no consequence for disparaging the special needs community. Hmm. What do you say? 17 times in 3 minutes.
Right.
It seems unfair. So I want to advocate for those who can't advocate for themselves.
Wow. Good on you, man. Good on you.
Yeah, really, man. That is one of my good friends just had a special needs child, his first kid. She's like 1 year old now, and I was the first time just seeing him like as a father and then also all these other
what
issues.
What are the child's challenges?
It's like this, it's just this like weird genetic thing where she can't swallow and it's like salivary problems and it's like it's one of those bizarre things where the doctor's like, we've only seen this like 8 times.
Well, all
also
right.
Also, a Jew who's 6'10", which is just another odd
yes,
sort
a Maccabean.
An odd Maccabean. Maccabean warrior, yeah.
But you're not Jewish.
I was raised Jewish.
You were?
In Short Hills, New Jersey. What are you kidding
me?
Oh,
yeah. I'm thinking McGinley is like Irish full and through, right?
I am a de facto member of the tribe.
Hey!
Zach always said I was a member of the tribe.
Okay. We'll take you.
You're damn right, right? You will.
I don't think we have any choice.
No, I'm in. I'm a member.
Yeah, he can member. He seems like a more powerful force than either of us.
Beat me up, too, in a Maccabean way.
He's also got the tough Irish side, so we can't say anything about it.
I'm an Irish Jew.
Look at that. Wow.
Terrified.
So, okay, that's the end of round two. So you have to pick a winner of that round. Mm. I know. It's tough to...
For the questions?
Yeah, the questions.
I'm now going to side with you because we're Maccabeans together.
Yeah, yes. Sorry, bud.
I am Jewish.
I know, but you didn't give me the full...
I didn't Jew it up enough?
No, you didn't.
You think you're Jewier than me?
Absolutely.
Oh, that is absurd. That is a compliment. That is a compliment, but absurd that John C. McGinley thinks he's more Jewy than me. Wow. One of the tougher actors I've
seen. I'm not going to use the word Jewy, but that's very fun. Jewish.
All right, you have 20 seconds. Fair to prove enough. You're Jew. No, I'm just kidding. Okay.
I'm thrilled that he made that assessment. Yo, Matt.
Yes.
This is Mo Mandel over here.
Hey, Mo Mandel.
I watched a hilarious comedy special the other night on CISO, which is the NBC digital comedy platform.
Okay.
It was called Negative Reinforcement by a comedian named Mo Mandel.
Mo Mandel. I don't know the name.
I don't know if I'd heard of him either, but it was hilarious. And it's one of many great comedy specials, originals, that are on CISO. And get this, they also have their own original programming, like Hidden America with Jonah Ray, Take My Wife by Cameron Esposito, as well as every episode of SNL ever.
What is CISO exactly?
So it's a streaming site, CISO.com. You can also watch it on Roku and Amazon Fire Stick, and it's all comedy 24/7, no ads, $3.99 a month. But I know, too good to be true. Get this. You sign up now using the promo code Theo,
Theo.
I think is named after our good friend Theo Vaughn.
I would hope so.
Or amazing coincidence. You get it. 2 months free.
Wow. Okay, boom. Cool. So it's funny. It's all comedy shit all the time.
All comedy all the time. It's all the place for comedy. It's for comedy nerds by comedy nerds. And it's just amazing. And not just because I'm on it.
But you are on it. So everybody come and support Mo Mandel. Go to CISO.com, CESO.
Yeah.
And as you said, use promo code Theo. Get 2 months free, and after that, it's just $3.99 a month. But it's well worth it because it's
yeah. It's also got like every episode of the Monty Python, Steve Coogan's Alan Partridge, the original Office with Ricky Gervais.
Oh, really?
Got all this great British stuff. Yeah, it's got just a lot of awesome stuff.
Sounds like a good investment if you want to laugh.
It's like imagine if a latte could make you laugh for a month straight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I got it.
CISO.com. There you go.
Now back to the show. All right, so this takes us to our final round three, which is a mini challenge based on our guest. And since you are on the show, Stand Against Evil, which is about witches and whatnot, we decided we would each have to give our most evil laugh or voice.
You got to go first.
All right. Glasses off.
Ooh, that was solid. You had like a nice sort of like reverb there.
That's a leader at the turn. Yeah.
Oh, I really set that bar.
I always want to go wipe out when I do that. Wipe out.
Yeah.
No, don't add wipe out.
No, sorry. Don't think about that.
I want to go, Mo.
Because he did like the high pitched witch thing. So it's like, I don't want to go that zone. You know, I got to kind of go Igor or something like that. So let me just. Perfect.
Ooh.
Sort of like, try to take like a backdoor approach.
We'll do it together. You ready? Let's do it. 1, 2, 3.
Perfect.
I'm going with Mo.
What?
Yes! Maccabean comeback train!
With Mo. That was some serial killer shit.
Yeah, wow, I was really trying to get weird with it.
That was some seven shit there.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Okay,
good.
All right. Well, congratulations, Mo.
You know what I really brought to that? A little bit of Elvis dust. Call back. Bookended the whole podcast.
Wow. Okay. Well, congratulations,
thank you
sir.
So much. Thank you.
That voice was a little too natural for me, actually.
I'll just take that. Sure.
So, John, thank you so much for coming in.
Cheers.
Man.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Mo. Yeah,
thanks for talking about everything. And Stand Against Evil on IFC. And anything else that were any other films?
No, I think coming out. Anything? They got a bunch, but we'll get to that next.
It's now about Stand Against Evil, which I saw the first episode of and love.
Good.
Yeah, they sent a copy to me. I loved it.
It gets really, really subversive.
I was going to say, what can we expect through these 8 episodes?
It's just wrong.
I'm in. That to me is the right thing you can say about a TV show.
It's just wrong.
Yes.
It's just wrong. And it feels good being wrong.
Yeah, and it doesn't placate political correctness, and it's just really effed up.
You know what? That's awesome. In a day like, well, literally tomorrow is election day, and we have like crazy stuff going on.
Right, we got Jackass number one, yeah, and then exactly. The other one who's everything she says, and I'm going to vote for her, but everything she says is the most rehearsed thing on the planet.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's like, and so Stan, to me, exponentially is more welcomed and refreshing.
Yeah.
Between those two.
Stan for president.
She's going to win in a landslide.
You think? Yeah.
Yes.
She is.
I think in the bottom of the ninth, she's going to win in a landslide.
I hope so.
Let's hope so.
And if not, we'll
landslide. You heard it here.
I'm hearing it there. I, once again, did not get it together to register to vote, and I feel terrible.
Mo,
but I have been tweeting. I've been making
take away
tweets.
Take away that win. That's not okay.
Landslide.
Okay.
Yeah, but she's going to carry the state of California.
Yeah, but he's not voted.
But that's why I never feel obligated.
But that is a cop-out, Mo.
It's a cop-out. I feel bad about it. I always mess it up.
There's also some huge measures on it.
That's true. So if the other guy wins, we're bringing Stan in.
He's not going to.
He's not going to. But if he does.
The hypothetical is
okay,
not even.
Not happening.
If he doesn't win, he's going to need a job. I think Stan Against Evil 2, he plays like some sort of weird zombie creep evil.
I'm not
He'd
a
be
fan.
So perfect.
I know.
But he'd be such a perfect evil
just
creature. Just go.
Back
just go away.
Into the
okay.
Queen's
I agree.
Neighborhood he spawned that spawned him. And
just go away. Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, stay tuned for that one.
Yeah.
Everybody watch Stan Against Evil, and again, thank you so much, this legendary actor. It was interesting hearing so much about your craft and your experiences and your personal stuff, and I was very enwrapped in it all. So thank you so much
Thanks,
for
man.
Coming.
Thanks, Mo.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, bye, guys. We'll talk to you later. Cheers.